views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. Claudette brings fresh, innovative perspectives that push the boundaries of what organizational cultures can and should be. Learn how to catalyze your organization's workforce into an authentic, intentional, and financially successful culture. Now here's your host, Claudette Rowley.
Hi, everybody. I'm Claudette Rowley, and you are listening to Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence on Transformation Talk Radio. Stay with us for the next hour and let us help you experience some groundbreaking ways to transform your company's culture. Twice each month, we have some of the most foremost experts on organizational culture, helping you understand how to make a brilliant culture the rule rather than the exception. Today, I'm really excited and looking forward to having a great conversation with Michael Mankins. Michael is the co-author of Time, Talent, Energy, Overcoming Organizational Drag and Unleashing Your Team's Productive Power. So let me introduce Michael. He is a partner in Bain & Company San Francisco office and a leader in the firm's organization practice. He's also a senior member of Bain's strategy and industrial goods and services practices. Much of his work is focused on the strategic and organizational initiatives that drive performance and long-term value. With more than 25 years of consulting experience, Michael has advised business leaders in a wide range of industries, including automotive, aerospace, chemicals, diversified manufacturing, media, technology, and financial services. Michael's writings and ideas have appeared in Harvard Business Review, Wall Street Journal, Financial Times, and other publications. In addition to Time, Talent, and Energy, he is co-author of Decide and Deliver, 5 Steps to Breakthrough Performance in Your Organization, and The Value Imperative, Managing for Superior Shareholder Returns. In 2006, Consulting Magazine named Michael one of the year's top 25 most influential consultants. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Claudette. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so glad you're here. I loved your book. And as I was reading it, I thought, wow, I mean, this is a message that's so needed in organizations. I'm curious, what inspired you to write the book?
Well, there are two things that happens sort of in very short succession that prompted me to write the book. The book, in its first and foremost, is really about workforce productivity, organizational productivity, and why that matters, and what companies can do to generate higher levels of workforce productivity. But the first thing that struck me was some research we've done. So it's some academic, sort of an academic rationale for writing the book, which was completed by a group within Bain called Bain Macro Trends, which is an organization which applies macroeconomic research to the microeconomic and organizational issues that our clients face. And that group discovered that financial capital, as a result of the global financial crisis and demographic factors, has become super abundant and relatively cheap. So by superabundant, I mean as a magnitude of GDP, the amount of financial capital in the environment has grown every year since 1990. So in 1990, we had about $220 trillion of financial capital, which was about 6.5 times global GDP. Mm-hmm. And by 2010, that had grown to $600 trillion, or about 9 times global GDP. And if you extrapolate that forward, by 2020, it will easily surpass 1 quadrillion. I wasn't sure I'd ever have the opportunity to say that word.
Right.
1 quadrillion, or about 11 times global GDP. So we've got all this money out there that is flowing into organizations. And the question is, what is the fundamental source of competitive advantage in companies? So, as you indicated earlier, I've been in the wonderful world of work for almost 30 years. And when I was in business school and early in my career, I was always taught that the difference between the winners and losers was the skill which they deployed financial capital. That is, companies like GE, Berkshire Hathaway were winners because they had better access to capital and they were more disciplined in the way they invested it. Mm-hmm. Well, if you look forward, it's highly unlikely that the discipline and rigor with which an organization tackles the allocation and investment of a readily available and almost free resource is going to be the source of competitive advantage. It can't be. It's not scarce anymore. What is scarce is good ideas. And those ideas don't just materialize. They're the function of people, people who generate them and people who execute them every day. And so the real scarce resources for the next 20 to 30 years is really the time, talent, and energy of your workforce and how that's invested to generate the highest levels of returns. So the first reason why I wrote the book is really just that academic observation that I was always taught financial capital was what's going to matter the most. In the future, it can't possibly be the case. It's human capital that will drive financial or will drive financial performance and drive competitive performance. The other one was just really a reaction to a client. I will clean this up for the purposes of radio, but I was dealing with a CEO of a very large global manufacturing company who said to me, you know, I know when every worker on the manufacturing floor goes to the bathroom. I even know how long it takes them.
Wow.
Because we measure that stuff because we need to know exactly what our level of productivity, our manufacturing productivity is. He said, I have no idea what our white collar productivity is. I have no idea whether the team here in the corporate headquarters is really productive, not productive at all. What prevents them from being more productive? Because I don't know any of that. He said, so the measures of white collar productivity and the tools for managing white collar productivity just really haven't kept pace with manufacturing productivity. And then he acknowledged, as I think most of your listeners will appreciate, that more than 50% of even manufacturing companies these days are white-collar employees, be it knowledge workers or just purely administrative staff. And so getting the most out of those resources and getting stuff out of the way so that they can be as productive as they want to be when they come to work is going to be really important. And it was really the combination of those two, one that was just an observation of an executive, the other, which was a fairly in-depth research study by Bain and Macro Trends that prompted Eric and I to write the book.
Yeah, and that's a really the comment that CEO made about not knowing, as you said, what his administrative staff and the white collar workers were doing is really, really interesting. You know, how it's something we've really overlooked. And one thing that struck me when I was reviewing your book was the very first line of it, which is too many companies are living in yesterday's world. And I couldn't agree more with that. And I'm curious to get your take on that. Why are so many companies living in yesterday's world? What's going on?
I think that there's a fundamental change that's taken place. I guess we always think we live in a world of fundamental change, but the reality is that technology has enabled us to do so many more things with our time and talent than we were able to do just 40 years ago. And what it used to be that the differential in performance that you get out of an individual or a team really couldn't be magnified that much by technology. Today it is. In fact, even the mix of knowledge, knowledge workers in the economy has changed so much so that people who are continually focused on the old rules, which I think are principally around that assume that people are essentially all equivalently productive, and what you need to do is essentially just manage them carefully every day and invest capital behind the winners and then shed the losers. That just simply won't work going forward because we've essentially bled the stone dry in terms of efficiency gains. I know that sounds, it sounds unusual to say this, but there's one of the biggest contrasts that we talk about in the book and in subsequent digital pieces around the book is the difference in mindset between productivity and efficiency. Most people use those words interchangeably. And, you know, it makes sense. But efficiency is really about doing the same with less, generating the same level of output with fewer inputs. So you Six Sigma, spans and layers, all these tools that have essentially produced lean organizations, and those they have their place, are all designed essentially around efficiency. Productivity is different. Productivity is about generating more output from the same level of input. It's about doing more with the same. And subtly, that mindset's quite different. If you're focused on productivity, you're trying to remove obstacles to getting things done. If you're focused on efficiency, you're trying to remove inputs and eliminate waste. One is very, very good at sparking higher and higher levels of profitability. The other, productivity, is necessary to fuel higher and higher levels of innovation and growth. And in today's, again, low capital cost environment, the value to most companies comes from accelerating growth versus continuing to improve the efficiency of existing operations. And I think executives are struggling. There's sort of a dearth of ideas for how to grow your business. There's a inability or using old methods, those ideas tend to be screened out. And even those ideas that make it to the bottom of the funnel, the organization doesn't really have the skills and capabilities to turn those ideas into great performance, into new businesses, new products. And the result of all of that is we were all taught, and I put myself in this group, that efficiency is very, very important. And what we've lost the sight of in the new world is that it's really productivity that matters. There's that. The book is about how to raise productivity. It's less about how to improve efficiency, although many of the tools can be cross-applied.
Yeah, and that's such an incredibly important distinction. And thanks for sharing that. In my work in organizations, I think that's often, as you were saying, not understood. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Cultural Brilliance with Claudette Rowley. And when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Michael Mankins about productivity, efficiency, and what is organizational drag. Stay tuned.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher, Sarah Luce, brings her unique style to the hit show, Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio, on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit SarahLuce.com. That's SarahLuce.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to TransformationRadio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
What is a brilliant culture and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the RAD Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-9000. 972-5366.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance, the DNA of Organizational Excellence. I'm Claudette Rowley, and for those of you just joining us, my guest today is Michael Mankins, who's the co-author of Time, Talent, Energy. And Michael, one of the things I know we wanted to touch on in our conversation was this great idea you talk about in the book, which is organizational drag. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. We started with the notion of if people really do want to show up for work every day and do their best work and be as productive as possible, what gets in their way? We call these bureaucratic procedures, processes, and other forms of unproductive collaboration as being organizational drag. They're essentially the things, the obstacles that get in the way of people producing their best work and being as productive as possible each and every day. And we did two forms of research to sort of quantify organizational drag. That research basically underlies the entire book. But one form of research was a broad-based survey that we did with the Economist Intelligence Unit, which is the research arm of the Economist magazine that folks see in the airport. Mm-hmm. And that was with senior teams from 308 large companies, where we were asking them essentially what the level of productivity loss was. And we complemented that research with deep organizational audits on 25 large global companies. And those organizational audits used essentially workforce analytics and data mining tools to look at calendar, email, IM, and other data to assess how the organization collectively spent its time. And the two combination of the two pieces of research allowed us to quantify, on average, how much of an organization's productive power is lost to these elements of organizational drag. And the headline's pretty stunning. Most companies, I should say, lose more than a quarter of their productive capacity to organizational drag. That is essentially more than one full business day a week is wasted due to bureaucracy and other procedures. These are most often manifest for the people in your audience. So what is that? What do I mean by organizational drag? You know you're in an organization that has a lot of organizational drag. If you see, if you spend a lot of your time in meetings, that should never have been put on your calendar. If many of those meetings are longer than they need to be, even if they should have appeared on your calendar, or if many of those meetings have dramatically more attendees than required in order to accomplish what needs to be done those sessions. You also know you're in one of these organizations if you receive a lot of emails that you should never have received, that you find yourself being copied on a lot of emails that don't actually pertain to you, that the common practice is to reply all to most emails. And all of those factors, they're symptoms, right? That's not the problem itself, but they're symptoms of organizational drag. And the time and data management tools really highlighted some pretty stunning findings with respect to what the average mid-level supervisor faces today in terms of organizational drag. And these statistics are real. So the average frontline supervisor today, this is not a senior executive. This is somebody 5-6 levels potentially below the chief executive. So it's a mid-level manager, works about 46 hours a week. That's across the 308 organizations in the survey, and was actually supported by the organizational audits we did too. Of that 46 hours, 23 hours are spent in meetings.
That is stunning.
Another 10 is spent responding to e-communications. That's IM, Slack, but email mostly. So you'd say, okay, that's 33 hours. That leaves, you know, something like 13 hours to do work, individual work. But if you subtract out periods of time less than 20 minutes, recognizing that it's really hard to engage in deep work when you're either just recovering from your last meeting or just about to go into your next, you actually find that the average frontline supervisor has less than 6.5 hours a week to actually do work, which means that most of the people in your audience, I would suspect, play catch-up after hours and on weekends. The sad part about the meeting and email statistics isn't that there's a lot of meetings and a lot of emails. That could be good. It's the fact that in our research, we found that of the meeting time, the 23 hours a week, there's a portion of that that is dedicated to meetings that it should never have taken place in the first place. It's small, but nevertheless, it's a pure waste of time, pure waste of every single hour of every single individual that spent a time in those meetings. Then there's actually a significant portion, about a third of meeting time for the average frontline supervisor is meetings that that person should never have been invited to. It's not that the meeting shouldn't have taken place. It's that that person was not necessary as an attendee. And then there is a portion of meetings, another 20%, that are meetings that should have occurred, that individual should have been invited to, but they didn't need to attend the whole meeting. It may be a 5-hour meeting and they only needed to attend an hour. If you apply the same rules to emails, you would say that there's 16 hours a week of purely wasted time. Two business days, if you work an 8-hour business day, but almost two business days a week that is essentially wasted time. And the result is if you could liberate all of that, you could free productive capacity. Now, you can't eliminate all of it, but you can eliminate some. And I'll wrap up with this particular quote, which I found to sum it up pretty nicely. I had an executive tell me, this is several months ago, but it was after the book had already been well in the works and almost published. But he said, my most productive meeting is the one that occurs at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. He goes, why? Because it's not 1 minute longer than it needs to be.
Right.
There's not one person invited to that meeting that shouldn't be there, because it's considered rude to invite somebody to attend a meeting at 7 a.m. on a Saturday that doesn't need to be there. He said, but you take that same meeting and you plunk it down at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday, and all bets are off. There'll be twice as many attendees. It will be twice as long. And he said, there may even be cookies.
Right. Just to get people to come. Right.
Yes, exactly. And so if we could treat every meeting as though it were occurring at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday, you could liberate huge amounts of unproductive time that could be channeled into, you know, greater creativity, greater innovation, and better execution of existing strategies. And all of that would produce better performance. And that's the spirit of organizational drag that we try to capture in the time section of time, talent, energy.
Yeah, and it was something you said in that section about everyone's so busy, you know, as you've just described, right? Everyone's so busy, yet when you go in an organization, everything can be, in some organizations, so slow, right? And that just that contrast really struck me.
It's that dichotomy that we all feel ridiculously busy,
right?
But yet we don't get as much done as we think we could or should. And it's that paradox that it's that difference. What sucks up all of the time? That is the elements of organizational drag that we try to describe, both through the research, but also through some of the experience of companies that have been trying to wrestle with it.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to take a quick break. This is Claudette Rowley, and you're listening to Cultural Brilliance Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about what we can do to lessen organizational drag, to start to turn that around. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you're dealing with fear and anxiety, you've probably noticed that the more you fight these emotions, the stronger they seem to get. Dr. Friedemann Schaub, the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution, explains that instead of suppressing, we need to identify and resolve the deeper, subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety. His personal breakthrough program has helped thousands worldwide to overcome their emotional challenges. To learn more, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com and schedule your free consultation with Dr. Schaub now.
You, yes you, can be the highest version of yourself. Wellness coach and natural beauty expert Dr. Agnes Frankel is on a mission to help you play the game of your life. Win in vibrancy, health, and beauty. Because you deserve it. Dr. Agnes goes beyond the limits in her personal coaching sessions to revolutionize health and wellness. Now is the time to unleash your true power. For more information, visit dragnesfrankel.com.
Awareness is universal. Establishing a living awareness through meditation brings peaceful, healthy, and creative well-being into your everyday life. The practice of living awareness, Spiritfire's own meditation practice, is built on this belief and is designed for every level of practitioner. Each year, Spiritfire hosts living awareness meditation retreats that allow you to explore the practice in depth at our retreat center in beautiful Western Massachusetts. Introduce yourself to meditation and the practice at the Foundation's retreat. Attend, in silence, a silent meditation retreat focused on mindfulness, presence, and nature. Or be engaged with the meditation sittings themselves at the Deepening Retreat. Start adding to your awareness and attend a meditation retreat designed to cultivate consciousness in your everyday life. For details on attending a Living Awareness Meditation Retreat, visit upcoming events at www.spiritfire.com.
Do you feel that there's a bigger, better life for you? Is there anything holding you back from living the life you were meant to live?
If you'd like to find your life's true purpose and calling, join the world's foremost authority on primal spirituality, David Karsher, in Becoming a Son Radio, emotional and spiritual intelligence for a happy, fulfilling life. Tune in once a month to Becoming a Son Radio with David Karsher on the Dr. Pat Show and Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit davidkarsher.com today.
Do you want to tap into your true potential, get creative, and learn to live with more joy? Join Vicki Todd, host of Unstuck Joy, in Art Vision Journaling. Draw, doodle, collage, and write your way to intuitively creating your ultimate life vision with simple art prompts. No experience necessary. Vicki will show you how. All art supplies are included. Join Vicki every second Saturday monthly, 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific, at Spa Air in Kirkland, Washington. To register, visit spaair.com. That's spaeir.com.
We're back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley, and my guest today is Michael Mankins, co-author of Time, Talent, and Energy. Michael, for folks who are interested in learning more about the book, is there a website or another way that they can find out more?
Sure. We've set up a website at www.timetalentenergy.com. That actually shares some of the research that we've talked about and allows folks to do a quick diagnostic on their own organization to see how they compare to the best in terms of productive power and what elements of time, talent, energy they might manage differently in order to close the gap between their organization and the best.
Great.
So
thank you.
www.timetalentenergy.com.
Nice and simple. Excellent. So before the break, we were talking about organizational drag, and you'd shared some really compelling statistics with us. And I know we want to talk about talent, but before we go there, what are a couple of, if an organization is experiencing drag, and we know almost all are, what are a couple of steps, you know, listeners can take to start to address that?
Yeah, so if you take a step back, organizational drag is the root cause of organizational drag typically comes down to one of two factors. Either a company is overly complex. By complexity, I mean that it takes too many interactions or it takes more interactions than required to actually produce output. Mm-hmm. And that's the result of essentially organizational complexity, which I'll come back to in a second. Or there's a culture of collaboration for collaboration's sake.
Mm-hmm.
The latter is becoming increasingly common in American, Western European, and sort of Anglo countries,
mm-hmm.
where you know you're in one of those organizations if meetings are sort of a status symbol, where the more meetings I attend, the more important I must be. Or if you feel that you can't count on your boss to relay information that important information that you need to know that was presented in a meeting that you couldn't attend. And that one has become a major factor. So 20 years ago, meetings were very hard to set up because nobody was on a common calendaring system. So you had to call everybody's either their assistant or themselves and pick a time, et cetera, to set up a meeting. Mm-hmm. Today, that's very easy. And so what leaders have done back in the old days, a leader was expected to communicate to their subordinates any pertinent information that was shared during a meeting that those subordinates couldn't attend. Today, many leaders say, that's too much trouble. Just invite them. Just invite them. And then you forward the invite, and that's why the average attendees at meetings has grown at a 7 to 8% compound rate ever since 2008. There's greater and greater attendance. Well, if you're a subordinate in that environment, you can't count on your boss to share the information that you need to do your job that's in meetings that you're not there. So you think, I better be in the meeting. You want to be in the meeting. And that creates this vicious circle where everybody is in every meeting and the amount of time that's consumed in those sessions grows at this exponential rate. And so that's the big source, the big observed difference in organizational drag is literally meeting time. Mm-hmm. That meetings have become so that the average number of attendees has grown, the length of meetings has grown, and the number of meetings has grown over the course of the last two decades. And if it continues at this current rate, you're simply not going to be able to, there's not going to be any time left to essentially do work. So it's those two elements. You have to tackle either the complexity of the organization and or the culture of collaboration for collaboration's sake. So here's a couple of ideas. First and foremost, I think that organizational complexity drives most organizational drag. That is, it's a natural symptom of growth that as companies grow and expand, they add new products, they add new customer groups that they want to serve, they may even enter new countries. Unless they carefully control it, each of those will lead to more and more interactions being required to make the same decisions that were made before. So the important point, we call those decision nodes, and it's people that the interaction between people that needs to occur in order to support decision making. Mm-hmm. You have to deactivate nodes. You have to actually be very clear who needs to be involved in what decisions and how, in order to ensure that not everybody is involved in every decision on every dimension. So you have to, quote, deactivate nodes and keep them deactivated in order to limit the number of interactions. And that actually can have a very rapid effect. But essentially what you're trying to do is eliminate unnecessary functions in certain countries or specific to certain customer groups. Or by aligning the functions that exist so that you're constantly interacting with the same people so that the efficiency of each interaction goes up or the productivity of each interaction goes up. Either of those, organizational simplification or organizational alignment, can deal with a complexity issue. The cultural issue, I think, is tougher. And there are some things that we've seen people do that has worked. So one of the cases we use in the book is when Alan Mulally became CEO of Ford, he didn't exactly state it this way, but he's essentially behaved in a way that said there's a zero-based budget on time. And what that means is for every meeting that you add, you have to subtract an organizational time of the same amount so that the total calendar doesn't grow over time, that you're not expanding the amount of time that's spent. The other one that I think, though, that's had the biggest effect, and many listeners, I think, would relate to, is the same technology that allows us to data mine calendaring IM email data can also be used to generate information for executives on what load, what the organizational load is that they're putting on their teams each week as a result of the meetings they schedule, the emails they send, et cetera. Those reports, and then you can generate the same information for executives at the same level, the same information for the average of executives in that function, country, et cetera, whatever comparisons you want to do. But you say to them, look, we'd like to reduce the load on the organization by, say, 15%. And we're not going to police you. We're just going to give you data. And I had a colleague, I may draw the analogy to dieting. So whenever I want to lose weight, I start taking a food log. I start writing down what I eat. Well, just the natural act of writing down what you eat makes you eat less. same thing with exercise. You want to exercise more, write down the amount of time you spend exercising. Well, the companies that have gone through this real-time reporting have found the same effect. So if you know you're putting a big organization load on the organization because of the meetings you schedule, you start being more particular about who you invite to meetings. The same thing's true with email. We have a statistic in the book, which is only qualitatively assigned, so I don't want people to write this in stone, but we think that somewhere around 2 to 3% of organizational productivity is lost by reply all.
I saw that in the book. Yeah, by reply all. Eliminate reply all. Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's just if you could, you can, but at least if you have the mental picture that says reply all actually consumes an enormous amount of organizational time, you might do it less. I'll relate this story. I'll try to keep it short. But I remember I tried to practice what I preach. And Bain is a very collaborative environment. And I walked into a partner meeting and I had a colleague say, did you get my email? I said, yes, I got your email. Well, you didn't respond to it. And I said, well, you didn't ask me to respond to it. It didn't require a response. There was nothing that indicated you wanted a response. And he gave me this puzzled look. And I said, look, I gave you and everybody else on that email the gift of time. If I had answered your email, you would have had to read my reply. Mm-hmm. You might have even felt compelled to reply to my reply. So I said, I'm giving you the gift of time. And I would ask that you do the same to me. Mm-hmm. You don't need to reply to emails that I don't ask. If I'm just sending you an email for your information, you shouldn't feel obligated to respond to it because it will just consume time. So a lot of that mindset, I think, has to focus in order to overcome the collaboration for collaboration's sake culture, which has a lot of positives, but does have an impact on organizational productivity.
Absolutely. And it strikes me, we're going to go to break in a minute, and it strikes me that it's the words, you haven't used these words, but it's making me think of being self-aware, right? And organizationally aware of how we're using our time and things like that. How many meetings, like you said, how many meetings are we in? What is the organizational load that's being created and raising that awareness so people can make better decisions?
Yeah. So you can treat time as the scarce resource that it is.
So that it is. Exactly. Exactly. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. This is Claudette Rowley on Cultural Brilliance Radio. And when we come back, Michael and I will talk more about talent and this really important role, critical role that it plays in successful organizations. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
Thrive is what we experience when our mind, body, and soul operate as one. When we thrive, we excel on all levels. Thrive is the mindset that matters. It is essential to our being. Have you ever found yourself looking for the instruction manual on how to thrive? You'll find everything you need to help you feel strong, powerful, and peaceful in your own body. So don't waste any more time. Visit thrivebyjen.com today.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you traveling most of your day? Do you want to take Transformation Talk Radio with you anywhere you go? Well, guess what? There's an app for that. Just go to the App Store on your Apple device or the Google Play Store on your Android and search Transformation Talk Radio. Catch all of our live shows no matter where you are. Thanks for listening.
Are you ready to thread your life with intuition? Intuit Apparel can help you do just that. This is not just about a piece of clothing. This is about a movement, an awakening, and staying centered in life. Your life. Intuitive and host of the radio show Get Into It, Lynn Brown, was given this image with the intention of a clothing line designed to represent the essence of life itself. Visit intuitapparel.com now and wear your intuition with pride.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Back on Cultural Brilliance Radio. I'm Claudette Rowley here with my guest, Michael Mankins. And Michael, one question I wanted to make sure to ask you today, because it's such an important one, is have you found that the best performing companies really have the best talent? Or is it something different?
Yeah. So Eric and I, when we started writing the book, had that hypothesis. So we started with the idea that, oh, this isn't that hard. It must be that the best performing companies just have better people. That's why they're so much more productive. And that was based on some research we had done a few years ago that just highlighted the big difference in productivity between the best and the average. So in the book, we share some of that. But the best aren't just better than the rest. They're a lot better than the rest. So the best software engineer at Apple basically writes 9 times more usable code per week than the average software engineer in Silicon Valley. So 9 times as productive. You know, even for sort of common tasks, the best fish butcher at Le Bernardin restaurant in New York can butcher 3 times as much fish per hour as the average prep cook in Manhattan. So 3 times, even for relatively repetitive and mundane tasks. The best, we found that the best blackjack dealer in Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, keeps their table playing 5 times longer than the average dealer on the strip. So there's this huge difference in productivity. So the mix of, you would think the mix of star performers that that a company has would have a dramatic impact on its productivity, and it does. But it's not the factor that explains the difference in productivity between the best and the rest, because the mix of star talent in the 308 organizations that we studied was essentially the same. About 1 in 7 employees is a star. The remainder, 6 and 7, are not. They're B or C players. But that mix is the same on average between the best companies and the rest, the best being the top quartile in our sample, the rest being the average of the remaining 3 quartiles. What's very, very different, and I mean very different, is the way that talent is deployed, teamed, and led. And I'll start with deployment. Deployment for most companies follows a model that we describe as unintentional egalitarianism. Mm-hmm. And what we mean by that is that it's not intended, but what companies basically do is they spread their star talent evenly across all roles. That's starkly different. In fact, the companies that are in the best are 9 times more likely to pursue a model that we describe as intentional, non-egalitarianism.
Which I love, which, by the way.
Which means they concentrate their difference makers in roles where they can make the biggest difference. And I'll use merchandise, I'll use retail as an example. I'll use a historical example. Back in the 80s and early 90s, the Gap was a high flyer. That's, you know, the Gap yeah. Kids, all that stuff. It was led by Mickey Drexler, who just recently retired from J. Crew. In those high flying years, Drexler identified merchandising as the business critical role. And he concentrated star talent in those roles so that 95, maybe 100% of the merchandisers at the Gap at that time period were star players. I use a historical example because you know they're star players that can be objectively assessed. Today, many of the CEOs of the world's leading retailers, Burberry's, Abercrombie & Fitch, American Eagle, were merchandisers at the Gap during the late 80s and early 90s. Hmm. So these people have proven to be stars. And it's that concentration of star talent in those roles, those say 5% of roles that are absolutely business critical, that explains a big portion of the difference in performance between the best and the rest. So it's this contrast of this intentionally non-egalitarian deployment model versus the unintentional egalitarian model. But it's not all of it. I mean, the other piece is teaming. And this was another one where we were surprised by the result. We ask executives how they form teams for mission-critical initiatives, for the most important initiatives the companies have faced. How do they assemble teams? And the lion's share of the average performers, so the rest, essentially assembled teams based on either who was available or in an attempt to form balanced teams with A, B, and C players. The best, by contrast, were seven times more likely to assemble teams that are consists of all-stars or assault teams is what they used to be called at Apple. And that difference basically means that you get this huge multiplier effect. So it turns out that the level of productivity increases sort of geometrically with the proportion of stars that an individual team has. We use the example of NASCAR racing and pit crews. Kyle Busch in the early 2000s was considered to have the best pit crew in NASCAR. And that could be objectively assessed because his NASCAR team is consisted entirely of all-stars, an all-star, you know, oil changer and all-star tire men in these cases. And they train as athletes in the off-season. Mm-hmm. A standard pit consists of 73 different maneuvers. They change all four tires, they refuel the car, et cetera. His pit crew can perform a standard pit in 12.12 seconds. It's amazing to see.
It is.
You take one of his pit crew members out, and you insert just one average pit crew member. That time jumps to more than 23 seconds, nearly doubles. You take two out, and you substitute two average players. That time jumps to more than 44 seconds. It's almost a geometric relationship. You know, as the percentage of A players increases, the level of productivity increases geometrically. And it's this stark difference in the recognition of the force multiplier that teaming star talent together has also explained a big difference in productivity. The last bit I'll just say is leadership matters too. If you put a great leader in charge of an average team, he or she will increase the productivity of the team. The National Bureau of Economic Research several years ago found that they can increase about the productivity of a team by about 10%. You put that same leader in charge of an all-star team, and they'll increase the productivity of that team by far more than 10%. And you have to recognize that that team had dramatically higher productivity to begin with. So great leaders act as a force multiplier on the force multiplier of all-star teams. And so it's the way talent is deployed, teamed, and led that led to this huge difference in productivity between the best and the rest. And talent alone, as you, if you recall from the book, is about 20%, about half the differential in productivity between the best and the rest is explained by the way talent is deployed, teamed, and led.
Wow. Believe it or not, I feel like, Michael, we could continue to talk for an hour, and yet we're coming to a close here. There's so much richness in this book, and I want to thank you so much for being here today. My guest again has been Michael Mankins, co-author of Time, Talent, and Energy, and thank you for sharing. What I have to say from my perspective is a really refreshing look at how organizations can understand time, talent, and energy and really make some incredibly positive changes. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
So to all the listeners, thanks for being here. As always, we had a great time. And please join me the second and fourth Fridays of the month at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. Thanks so much, and we'll see you here next time.
You've been listening to the hit show Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence with Claudette Rowley. Conversations that are transforming the world of culture and business. You can download this podcast and find out more about Claudette and her breakthrough work at ClaudetteRowley.com. Please contact Claudette and find out how you can create a brilliant culture.